Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. Life got in the way this week for us, so we've pulled one of our most popular interview episodes from our other podcast, The A24 Project, to share with you today. Last year, I interviewed Greg Sestero, who played Mark in the famous Tommy Wiseau movie, The Room, to discuss his book, The Disaster Artist, which reflected on his experience shooting a film dubbed the worst film ever made, and its eventual adaptation into the critically acclaimed film of the same name, starring James Franco. Hope you enjoyed the show, and me and Dallas and Kim will be back next week.
Greg, when did you decide to write about your career and the role in the making of the infamous Room with Tommy Wiseau?
Yeah, I mean, it was a hell of a journey. It was, you survived making this insane film that I didn't think anybody would ever see. And so, time kind of just passed and moved on. And all of a sudden, it was about 10 years ago that people were like, dude, it's a thing. Like 1,000 people are showing up to watch this movie and they're throwing spoons at the screen and it's crazy. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I checked it out. I got interviewed for Entertainment Weekly. There was an article being written about the cult and the movie and by a UK journalist named Clark Collis. And he wrote this incredible article about like the cult and the fans and the celebrity fan base and all that. So I was blown away here, at that time, 5-6 years down the road, that this movie was still going, getting stronger, and people loved it. And so I thought, I love movies, and I've always wanted to tell stories and wanted to be an actor. And I thought, it's great what this movie's doing, but it's not a movie that's going to get you acting work, unfortunately. I found out pretty quickly. So I realized, the story behind the making of The Room, my experience coming to Hollywood, struggling as an actor and kind of meeting this eccentric persona that I didn't know anything about, but just trusted and went with it, and kind of sharing a common dream with somebody else, even though the odds are stacked against you and, this movie happening and working for very different reasons than it was supposed to, I thought could make a great movie because it was all laid out. You had the characters, you had, you finally had the ending. And so I just thought I'm going to write a book about my experience and hopefully that will get turned into a great movie. And I thought that was a fun challenge because, you're in something that's considered the worst movie ever. Why don't you take that and make it a positive and make some, turn something negative into something that would be redeeming. And so I started putting a book idea together.
What was the process of then bringing the book together? How did you and Tom Bissell, one of the co-authors on the book, how did you two work together to bring it to life?
I looked at some other interesting memoirs. I read about Ed Wood, which I loved the film. I also studied Sunset Boulevard, which was one of my favorite movies that also tells kind of a dark tale about Hollywood. And then I read Aaron Ralston's memoir about cutting off his arm and I thought, hey, this is kind of similar. But I knew I didn't want to just write a wacky book about the making of a bad movie. I wanted it to be a character story first. So I read an article in Harper's Magazine about The Room by Tom Bissell that I really liked, and it took its subject matter seriously. It treated Tommy as a filmmaker. It treated him as a real person and analyzed him and gave him a chance to speak for himself. And I thought that's the tone I want this book to be. I want it to be a nonfiction novel, not like a pop culture read. And so I spoke with Tom and he's like, yeah, let's see what you got, and agreed to kind of support. And we talked for a while and agreed that let's do it. Let's go out and write something first rate about something that's considered fifth rate and go for it. And so it was such an incredible process and a learning experience for me because, I'd always loved books and writing. Like, as a kid, I would write essays about the JFK assassination. I don't know why. I guess I had a morbid curiosity. But I always loved storytelling. And so Tom and I sat down, and we put the recorder on, and I started telling him stories the night before making The Room, what happened. And it was like we were at this really fancy restaurant. It was sort of a celebratory night. Tommy was excited. The Room was going to start shooting. I was very hesitant. And, you know, at that point, just helping out behind the scenes. And then, you know, this altercation happens at the restaurant. It's really embarrassing with these girls. And we're driving down Santa Monica Boulevard. And Tommy looks at me and he says, you know, you have to do The Room. And I'm like, oh, I am. I'm helping you. He's like, no, no, no. You have to be in The Room. You have to act. You have to play Mark. This is your chance. You don't take your chance, it would be the biggest mistake of your life. And I'm going like, we already have somebody cast as Mark. It's all ready to go. And it's literally almost like fate. It was like every other time I'd said no. And for some reason on this night, the night before, I was like, huh. He put this seed in me that maybe it would be a mistake. And so we recorded this chapter and it was like, boom, we were off. And that was like where the story begins. And we had some time, and what I started doing is just reading so many nonfiction books that have been turned into movies, and like, what is it about those stories that make great films? And it was like I said, I got back to the characters and their conflicts, and so I got a chance to really sit back and delve into my experiences being roommates with Tommy, and really the personal story. Not the making of The Room, but really our friendship and what drove me and what drove him. And I found so much material that I had, you know, kind of recorded but had not thought of in a while in my mind. And so I was able to sit there and just spill it all out. And all these stories came back to me, which eventually became chapters. And so I wrote out all these experiences, all these stories, and just kind of framed them along a narrative of every other chapter where you're talking about my friendship and going to LA, and then we're talking about the making of The Room. And so we work them together in a way that you're getting to know us through the making of The Room and through our friendship and coming in at very unnerving moments. And then at the same time, the next chapter, you fall back in love with Tommy because you know that what he's trying to do is in all of us. But then you go back to the set and he's a madman. So as the book just kind of took on its own form, and Tom and I, we went back and forth and rewrote chapters and formed them. And then we got to work with the editors at Simon & Schuster, which was really exciting because I think they thought they were just going to get a quirky making of The Room book. And I think when they read it, they were very surprised that it went as far as it did. So, you know, it was a few years of just slamming on this thing and working every day and trying to find any angle you could to tell this story. I would go on walks every morning and kind of email myself quotes and ideas and things Tommy had said, because I wanted every line in the book to be something Tommy said in that moment or has said. You know, I went to weird places in Eastern Europe just to kind of research things. So I really just kind of dove in and wanted this to be something really special. And it just taught me a lot that anything in this business, you know, doing something creative, it's really all about the work and it's all about going for that and focusing on that and forgetting everything else. You know, a lot of this book was written in a small motel in the dead of winter in Escanaba, Michigan, 12 below outside. And we, Tom and I were, you know, working around the clock. And so it's not usually glamorous. I think a lot of people think that creating is glamorous. And, you know, it can be sometimes, but, you know, really you fall in love with the work and everything else kind of falls aside. So we didn't also have much time once we got down to it. Like, we really just, a lot of the prep work, we just went in there, we told the stories, we wrote them and turned it in. So it was a very, very trying experience, but also very rewarding.
There's been so much kind of myth, truth, and fact have been written and generated by the room and discussed. Did you want to sort of aim to set the record straight on the room and those involved in it, or did you always want to kind of keep elements of it a bit of a mystery?
Yeah, I think I was just trying to tell what was pertinent to my experience. I think a big part of the room's appeal is nobody really knows much, and that's what makes it fun and that's what makes it interesting. You know, why green screen? Why two cameras at the same time? There's just so many questions about the room. It's like you want to give some answers, but at the same time, you want to keep a lot of that mystery because that's what makes it fun.
And the book for me is a great insight into what's it like for like an up and coming actor or someone looking to get their break in Hollywood. Those small achievements or strides that so many young talents will face trying to break into Hollywood. What's been the reaction of actors to your book?
I think it's very relatable. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, "Hey, you know, reading your book made me want to give it another shot, or made me want to try to record my album." You know, I think it makes you realize we all have that fear of what if, and you. I think when you read the book, you realize, hey, there's no point in worrying about that. Just go for it, and the worst case is, at least you make your project or you go on your auditions and you try, and you know, maybe it's not everything you wanted it to be, but I think the most important thing is to go for it. And I think an element of concern or fear is not always a bad thing. I think sometimes it brings the best out of you. I've written some of the stuff I respond to the most when I'm not going through a good period. So it's okay to feel those things.
What was it like to receive such positive reactions to the book and people to know you more as Greg Sestero than, hey, that's Mark from The Room?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big part of the goal was to tell a story that humanizes you and makes you realize like you're actually not just somebody on a weird rooftop and a red shirt. I gave it everything I had. I there was no stones unturned. I treated it as if it was going to be my last thing I ever did, and I gave it everything I had. And I think that was really rewarding, and it was exciting in a way because I think a lot of people didn't know what to expect, and so you could take people in a much different direction than if they kind of had big expectations. So it was it's continued to be a great surprise how much people appreciate the story in the book, and you know, the fact that especially the audiobook, which actually just came out in the UK on Audible. I narrated it, and so I think it's cool that people listen to it on their road trips and you know, get some laughs.
I was just off to ask you about the audiobook. What was the experience of that like? Because I listened to it recently, and I love the impressions. They're so nailed down, and you've got a great voice for an audiobook as well. What's the experience for doing sort of voice work for a book like this?
Well, it was funny because the publisher didn't want me to read it. They wanted like a professional narrator. And I just thought there's no point to have an audiobook if you're not telling your own story. And I'm not going to give up the opportunity for someone else to play Tommy just because I felt like that was something I had been working on for many, many years. And I thought I would be the only one who could really pull it off properly. So I held out and they said, sure, we'll let you read your own book. And you know, I got into the booth and it was like the first page. I remember thinking, dude, I don't know if I can do another 300 of these. It was a lot of focus and a lot of it was like, you know, being in the gym and running a marathon, but it took about 2 weeks to record. The guy who was helping me, do the recordings had never heard of The Room and never read the book. And so a few times he had to stop because he'd be laughing at just how insane the story was. So that was kind of a good sign. And then it was amazing. I ended up getting nominated for an Audie Award for Best Humor, which was pretty cool. So I'm just really glad. It's one of those things, like, stick to your guns if you really believe in something. You know, it would have been a shame to have someone else voicing the story. I think it's such a personal tale that I'm really glad that I got a chance to do it.
When did you first hear of someone wanting to adapt your book into film? Like, as you mentioned, like, you're writing this book, but you can picture it becoming a film one day. When was that moment that you realized, actually, this is on the road to becoming reality?
It well, there was this really great book to film agent who read it before it came out, and he agreed to represent it, which was the first step, which was very exciting. And then, you know, he was asking, like, who do you see doing this? And I was, you know, I of course said David Fincher, because he's my favorite director. And he's like, I don't know, David's kind of dark. And so I saw this as kind of a dark Ed Wood, you know, something along the lines of Foxcatcher, where you have a lot of tension between the two characters. And so we had a few talks. Tommy was there, and Tommy was like, well, why don't you represent my new sitcom? Even though we were meeting about the book. And then the book came out. 3 weeks after it came out, I got a call from James Franco. He had read the book. He had never seen The Room at the time. He had heard of it, I think, and he read the book, and he's like, halfway through, he's like, he knew he wanted to make this movie. He knew he wanted to play Tommy, and he knew that he wanted Dave to play me. And so we had a kind of an interesting conference call with Tommy and James, and Tommy's like, you know, who play me in the movie? And James is like, well, you know, we'll find people, Tommy. Don't worry. He didn't know really what to say. And Tommy's like, well, what about Johnny Depp? And James is like, yeah, sure. And kind of laughed it off. And Tommy's like, why you laugh? You don't go down this direction. You don't know. And he's like, we'll find somebody, Tommy. We'll find somebody. And then I recommended, you know, I was like, James, I think you'd be a good fit. And so that kind of got the ball rolling. And Tommy's like, yeah, you know, James, I see a movie. You know, you do some good movie, you do some bad movie, but that's okay. I was like, oh, great. Hopefully this happens. But through the film adaptation process, I learned a lot from James, because it takes so much passion to get a movie made, to get something from the page to the screen, and to convince people to believe in it. And so, you know, James impressed me a lot, because he said he was going to do this. He said it was the story that he was most interested in making, and he did it. And I saw the process of kind of what that takes to pull off. And so it kind of set the stage for me to go out and try to make Best Friends, because I saw, if you really want to get that vision to the screen, if you really want to make movies, there's a certain way you got to approach it. And so watching James kind of navigate this story, you know, from the book and getting it adapted, was really a great experience.
Well, yeah. Was there any ever sort of concerns about being turned into film, one that might not be faithful to those that were involved, like such as yourself, and it could be potentially like a parody or a big in-joke? Was there ever sort of that kind of quality control where you're like, we want this to be faithful and respectful of those people that have put this film out?
I could just tell from what James, first of all, James wrote a review in Vice about what he thought about the book and the movie, and just the way he saw the story was so spot on and smart. And, you know, he referenced like P.T. Anderson films and all the things you'd want your story to elevate to. So I knew he, you know, he had the right angle, and I knew, having Seth Rogen as a producer, you know, he always puts on a good show, and they got really good writers to adapt the story. So I knew they were going to go for it. I knew it wasn't kind of like a stoner joke comedy. So I was never concerned. I mean, really, the concern is that people stop it from getting made, or just don't believe in it. That's really where my head was at. It's like, let's just get this thing made. And I think that the source material and everything is unique enough to make it something memorable.
Did you get to meet with Dave Franco before he was sort of cast, to talk to him about playing you? And did you have anyone in mind? Like you mentioned, sort of Tommy had a few folk in mind who could maybe play him. Who did you originally envision playing you?
When I was writing the book, I was thinking Javier Bardem as Tommy and Ryan Gosling as Greg. You know, but I think once James brought up the idea of brothers, I thought it was a cool choice that they could make work between them, you know, because the story is in a lot of ways about two guys that were brothers in a different way, and I thought that was a good choice.
And did you get sort of, did he reach out to you for any sort of advice, kind of get into the mind of Greg Sestero? What was the sort of dynamic?
Yeah, we had a couple great meetings, and we really connected on the fact that, you know, we both came to LA trying to be actors and having to kind of put in that time of auditioning and doing these weird projects that we really think are going to work. And then, you know, we see them, and we're like, oh dear God, this is bad. You know, and just kind of trying to keep the faith. You know, we both come from a similar area up in Northern California. We both like the same sports team, so we had a lot in common, and just it was funny to see Dave being introduced to this world, because I know he hadn't seen the room, and James kind of brought him in, and so it was funny to see just how, through his eyes, just how weird the whole thing is. So yeah, but we had some really good talks, and he really got, you know, what I went through.
Did you get to sort of visit the film during the production, or did you want to sort of keep yourself sort of hands off?
Yeah, I mean, I showed up just to enjoy. I never thought like, oh, they should do it this way or that way. I just was excited to be there. And again, to see it was such a fun set to be on, because everybody was working so hard, but also having so much fun. And the cast was incredible. You know, I went the day that they filmed with Sharon Stone and Bryan Cranston, and you know, getting to see these people recreate your story in a way was very therapeutic, and the whole thing was just really enjoyable.
Was it quite surreal to see a film being made of a book you've made of an experience that you've had? What was that kind of like?
Yeah, it just kind of, again, it made you realize, you know, every experience you have, you know, whatever struggles you have or good times or just your journey, there's nothing really goes to waste. And it made me realize all those times I was at Canner's, you know, wondering what was going to happen, or all those late night walks, it all was amounting to something. And so it made me value the time you have, and to make the most of each day, and to look at things positively rather than you know, getting down on yourself.
When did you sort of first see the completed film?
I got to see a test screening cut, and I loved it. It was incredible to see it in LA, like a few blocks from where it all took place, in the apartment. And, you know, it did change and get improved by the time it was released, but I could definitely see that it was something that audiences were going to be responding to. And it was fascinating to think, like, what are people that have never heard of The Room going to think of this, and how are they going to see Tommy and I? And that's where a big part of the reason why I started writing the new script after I saw the test screening.
And you mentioned there, how will people see you? How have people kind of seen you following this movie, you and Tommy?
I think they've been inspired. I think, you know, the movie showed what can happen, you know, if you follow your dream, what good can come from that, and what challenging things can come from that. And, you know, I think they relate to the underdog story, and they've really, you know, they've really enjoyed it. So it's been cool to have kind of a new audience discover all this.
The film got like rave reviews and reactions from South by Southwest festivals and circuits. How did it feel for something that you'd been through, and, you know, you'd faced challenges, maybe a negative reaction, to then come out of it with almost the complete opposite response? You get that, all that adulation that The Room never got on its original release.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like, you know, Tommy's pipe dream was for The Room to be nominated for Oscars, And my pipe dream was that this book would become something like that. And so you kind of throw it out to the universe. You have these big dreams and these big hopes, and then you get a taste of it and you realize, hey, you know, if you put your mind to something and you put your heart into something and approach it in the right way, good things can happen. And it was just a great lesson for me going forward that, you know, to approach things with the right mindset. And I think, you know, the fact that the audience loved the movie and loved the book and all that, it's a good starting point to go out there and now do the work that you really want to do.
The film went on to be nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. How was that for you? Were you one of those people that there was a lot of buzz going in that it would be nominated for that? Were you up first thing in the morning to see the announcements? How did you find out that a book you'd written had got to that stage, to get to the Academy Award nominee kind of stage?
A buddy of mine from Europe sent me a message that woke me up that morning. So that was obviously, you know, incredible and very exciting. I really thought James deserved the Best Actor nomination. So that was a little, you know, kind of a bummer that didn't happen. But it was a great reward that the book got there. And, you know, it's a once in a lifetime kind of thing where, you know, a moment, you know, capturing a period of time in your life that goes that far. So I really was blown away and really made me think, hey, you know, good things can happen. Get out there and keep writing.
A24 distributed your film in America. What's it like for you as a talent when you hear that they want to release a film in America that and put it within their filmography that's so close to you?
Yeah, I loved A24's films for quite a while, and I thought what a perfect fit for them to do this, and they did such a great job putting it out there in the right way, and it's just really an honor to be part of their canon as a film that, you know, won a Golden Globe and got nominated. Is something that, it's kind of, again, it's sort of going back to, you know, Tommy's initial dream. Hey, The Room is going to end up winning Oscars and I'm going to submit it. And, you know, it didn't happen for that, but luckily over time it built, you know, was able to be the inspiration for things that went on to do good things.
People obviously talk about A24 being incredible at marketing, and this film is probably, I think, one of their best marketed films. What was it like for you seeing your life, your book, and then this film adapted, and seeing it marketed in such a positive way that generated so much buzz for this film before it was even released?
I couldn't believe it. The first teaser that came out, I thought was so much fun, and the way that people responded to it and knew that they were going to get something that was special. And then the next trailer came out and you realized you were getting a film. So each trailer was so different and smart. And then we did, you know, South by Southwest, I think, got the excitement going. And then it was the Toronto Film Festival is where you really started to see this movie could get, you know, awards buzz. So it was just the time, everything on it was timed so well. And by the time the release came, people were intrigued by it. You know, fans were, you know, couldn't wait to see it. So it was just, again, I always try to learn something from each experience. So just working with such great film producers and studios like A24, it was just fascinating and inspiring to watch them work.
Do you have any favorite films from their filmography? Any that stand out to you as maybe a writer, but also as an actor?
I really liked The Witch. I thought The Witch was great. Moonlight is also one of my favorites. Ex Machina. I mean, all of their films are so, they take risks in the smartest of ways. and they're so genuine in what they're trying to say. I loved Hereditary and Midsommar. One of the ones I've been wanting to see for a while is Under the Silver Lake.
That's brilliant. And I think you would love that one.
Yeah.
Tarantino's favorite film of the year as well.
Really?
Yeah, he announced on a podcast last week, and I'd just done an interview with the film composer from that, and I was chatting about it. I was like, oh yeah, and Tarantino's just mentioned it as his favorite film of the year so far. And he's like, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I love the composer. He did an incredible score for It Follows as well. So that's one I've been really wanting to see. I'm trying to think. Yeah, there's just so many good movies, and they continue to keep pushing. It's Killing of a Sacred Deer. It's just cool to be in that group.
Tommy's kind of become one of sort of Hollywood's most interesting characters, with people so curious to learn more, even with books like this and the films like The Disasters. Does this add to his personality, or is he still the same man you met at the beginning?
Yeah, I feel like he was a little bit more, what's the word for it? He still has a childlike innocence to him. He's a little bit more tame in the beginning. I think he's definitely, he's become more eccentric, more extreme, which is, you know, not surprising. But, you know, he's still Tommy at the end of the day. I mean, it's been like 21 years since we hung out the first time. So very different in some ways, and then still very much the same Tommy.
And how have you sort of been affected by sort of the Disaster Artist, the book and its movie? How has that changed you as a person?
I think it's kind of made me, step up, work harder, get to know myself a little bit more. And sometimes you got to ask questions like, you know, what do I have to offer, and why, and how do I perceive myself versus what other people perceive? And I think the way to grow is to really face those questions. And if you want to make changes, if you don't like certain things about the way you're working or what you're offering, then make changes. And so it's just pushed me out of my comfort zone, I think. And also, I think I've become more of a risk taker. You know, I've become more confident in the fact that we're given a short time, and get out there and make the most of it. Don't fret too much about what's happened in the past, and focus on where you're at now and how to make each day something memorable.
I caught Best Friends last year at the Prince Charles when you and Tommy were having one of your legendary residencies there. And I was really surprised by it. It was not what I expected, but in a positive way. I was like, I wonder what these guys are going to do. Is it going to be more of the same? And I thought it was a real treat. Did you always have it in mind that you wanted to write your own feature? And how did that opportunity come around?
I've been trying to write some pilot episodes and TV series stuff. And after I saw Disaster Artist, I was like, you know what? I've never really tried with Tommy. I mean, The Room was just kind of more of a survival mode. But I've never really tried to do him justice. And I know he's got something there to offer on screen if it's just brought out properly. And so that's what I really thought. I was like, I had practiced with a Disaster Artist writing the book. I knew him. I knew the way he talks. And I thought, write a character for him where he can show up, and right away his visual presence works for him and not against him. And so I started writing the script, and it was just so much fun. He and I together as people that don't know each other and kind of starting over. And I started writing, and it was like 4 days I had the story, and it was just a great exercise. I didn't know if it would happen. I didn't think he would do it. And then he was very supportive. And he's like, yeah, I can do a project, but I have, you know, one request. And I'm like, great, here we go. He's like, what about if you and I are same height in the movie? It's like, same height? As in, what do you mean? He's like, you know, same height. Same, you're not taller anymore. I was like, okay, if that's what you want. You haven't even read the script, but sure, let's do it. And so once we got those few things out of the way and really focused on, I was really going at Tommy and trying to get a performance that people would watch and be surprised. And, you know, I've always had a different view of LA. You know, when you're a struggling actor, some people go to clubs and bars and do all that. But I walk the streets late at night, and I've seen so many different angles and read up on a bunch of history. And I was like, I want to try to shoot an LA movie that doesn't capture LA in the way a lot of people have seen. And so, you know, I was going at it in a much more artistic way and not trying to kind of live into the bad movie stuff. It was more about just doing something original. And so we went out and started making it. And, you know, a couple weeks in, I thought, you know, we were doing these scenes with Tommy and they were genuine, and we were really pushing to get real stuff that people would hopefully be invested in and in his character. And after a couple weeks in, I thought, you know, this could work. What we're getting is he's trying and it's coming together. And I was just excited to put something out to audiences that would be fresh and new and not kind of trying to repeat, you know, The Room, which I don't think you could ever recreate.
I've had the opportunity to watch a sort of a double feature with The Room, and then I could go along and watch Best Friends. What have been people's reactions to the film, to the fans of The Room, to fans of you guys, to this brand new thing that you've put together? And what's been that reaction like to see people kind of watching it?
I was really nervous the first time we showed it at Prince Charles, just because, you know, The Room is such an event movie and people are yelling from the moment they get into the theater. And so I didn't know how they'd respond to it, but they really took to it and they really enjoyed it. They were surprised and they were invested, which I thought was the coolest part. Like, they're like, oh shit, I actually care about Tommy's character. And that was one of the biggest challenges that I had, was will they buy in and try not to like make fun of it. I know, again, it's like The Room, where it just works better with a crowd. I know we were very fortunate to get international distribution. Actually, Lionsgate picked it up. So it's available worldwide now on streaming and digital and Blu-ray and all that. But I think having the crowd see it for the first time with, you know, in the theater was great to see. And, you know, I think there's still some people that expect The Room, and it's hard for them to kind of think, hey, let's keep our minds open here. But I think for the most part it accomplished the goal of giving the audience something different between us 15 years later. And what's funny is, of course, we never really do anything by the book, but it ended up becoming Best Friends Volume 1 and Volume 2. It's just kind of cool to see, you know, the first 20 minutes of people watching us doing something different in such a weird way. Have you had a chance to see Volume 2?
No, I haven't had the chance yet. I'm still stuck on Part 1. I've been on that cliffhanger for a year. Part 2 hasn't made its way to Edinburgh yet.
Oh, okay, because it's on, it's on Prime Video and it's on iTunes.
Oh, magic. I'll have to rent it from there.
Yeah, so you can watch mine. But Volume 2, because I wrote it as one script, so Volume 2 was a little bit more kind of the movie, the stuff that I'm interested in, you know, it kind of turns into like a Breaking Bad drama, if you can imagine that. And so that was also cool to kind of have the first one be, you know, Tommy and Greg, LA Noir, and then the next one is Tommy and Greg do Breaking Bad in Volume 2. But I think we've done some double features and you have a break in between, and for the most part people have they've appreciated it, and it's just kind of, again, it's pushed me now to work on something new, which is, you know, you take everything you've learned, you take your life experiences, and then you pour them into the next film.
When you're sort of writing the the script. Was there any sort of artists or sort of other filmmakers that you drew from or were inspired for when you made a film like this?
Yeah, I looked at some of the LA films that I really liked recently, like Nightcrawler, Drive. I always loved Double Indemnity. LA movies that aren't about show business, you know, per se. And so that's kind of what I took for Best Friends. And you know, the synth score, I really liked. Rich Freeland, who you interviewed, Disaster Piece, I listen, you know, his stuff is really great. And so capturing, you know, kind of an LA noir classic film with Tommy and I, and taken seriously and shot seriously in the way that those films were.
And finally, what's coming up that people can maybe look forward to? Have you thought about maybe writing another book, or is it kind of strictly sticking to maybe writing for film at the moment? Have you got an eye on even directing next?
Yeah, I'm right now in about 5-10 miles from the Mexican border, and I'm writing a horror film about a cult that lives down in the desert, in the secret society. And so I've been working on that for a few months, and I finally have gotten a draft. I knocked out a 9-day draft, which is crazy. And so that's what I hope to make next. And again, I think hopefully it'll be something totally different from the whole Room universe. I think horror has been has provided us some of those interesting films recently, and I want to, try to contribute to that.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure, and it's not just been great to hear about the making of the Room, the book, Disaster Artist, etc., but your positive attitude is real infectious, and I hope whoever listens to this feels inspired to go out there and take a chance on something that they're passionate about. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you, Greg.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me. And I like what you're doing.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.